Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House Committee advances bill requiring parental consent for healthcare procedures that teens go through, even if they're living in a dangerous situation at home. Small county line adjustments in northern Idaho, and Pullman city officials plan on a zoning overhaul to make way for short-term rentals. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report.
Twenty other states have already approved similar proposals. However, multiple California counties have come out against it, and 15 members of the state's congressional delegation recently sent the CPUC a letter of opposition. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Benji Hyer.
In London, I'm Simon Gaitan.
I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
I'm Max Pringle.
This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Despite concerns for youths in abusive situations, the Idaho House Judiciary and Rules Committee moved a Senate bill that would require parents have access to all medical records to the House floor Tuesday. The committee nearly killed Senate Bill 1329 on a close 9-7 vote, but then voted along party lines to send the parental rights bill, which has already passed in the Senate, to the full House. Republican Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls was the House sponsor of the bill.
Children are born to parents and families, and these families are the basis of what forms our society. And the laws of our society should affirm that relationship. And just as a side note, I don't know that everybody thinks of this, but our constitutional form of government was actually centered as the family being the base form of government. And it was very important, whether it was vertical or horizontal, the family was a base form of government. And it's important to the state that we protect this interest. It is our role to protect, as a legislature, to protect the parental rights. Now, we've had to bring lately statutes to protect that, both in education and rather even last year with the abortion trafficking. A parent should know and control that. The problem is in the medical field, we have really strayed from that. We're to the point now where it's not just allowing kids to make decisions all the way down through 14, but on a document that I passed out, you'll see the My Chart. The My Chart is something that has hit Idaho. It started, as far as I understand, it started in Kootenai County, and it's a document or a dashboard where kids are supposed to be able to get on to communicate with doctors, and parents are not supposed to be able to have access to that. This is at age 13. So it's because of this that this legislation is being brought forward. I would like to.
That was Republican Representative Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls. The bill has everything to do with the transphobia that has been part of much of the legislative action in the last few years involving teens' rights or lack thereof. Representative Ehart's co-presenter was Alliance Defending Freedom legal counsel Jordan Carpenter.
Otherwise, these policies are already present in Idaho. For example, the Richfield School District adopted policy 3281, which states that school employees should not disclose a student's transgender status or sexual orientation to other individuals, regardless of setting, including the student's parents or guardians, unless they have a legitimate need to know, or unless the student has authorized such disclosure. Several other school districts have adopted a similar, substantially similar policy. Jerome Joint School District, North Jim Payette Buell School District, and the Blaine County School District prohibits school staff from discussing a student's gender confusion with parents. So these policies embolden counseling programs in these schools to provide health care services to children who experience gender confusion, all without the parents' knowledge or permission. But parents have the right to know if the school is transitioning their child or providing harmful mental health services that put kids on a one-way street to medicalization. starts with puberty blockers and wrong sex hormones, but often leads to permanently irreversible surgeries. Ensuring that parents are informed of and consent to any provision of healthcare services is necessary to protect the health and safety of children in many contexts.
That was Alliance Defending Freedom legal counsel Jordan Carpenter speaking before the Idaho House Judiciary and Rules Committee on Tuesday. Michelle King of Lewiston, who is president of the LC Valley Youth Resource Center, testified against the bill.
The LC Valley Youth Resource Center is a shelter for homeless, abandoned, and abused teens. And we only serve local kids. So we're talking Idaho's youth who are without parental guardians. I'm here today to ask you to please do not pass this bill. Last year we served 292 individual youth in our prevention program and provided overnight shelter for 41 different kids, all who did not have active parents in their experience. And we work with CPS, but as you know, Idaho's Child Protection is struggling to protect youth, specifically teens. There aren't enough foster homes or solutions, so frequently children are actually left in the homeless shelter here in Lewiston. One specific young man, his father was incarcerated, his mother has remarried and didn't want anything to do with him. He was placed with a 91-year-old grandmother. Grandma died, and the state brought him no guardian for 2 years, the 16-year-old young man. When he was at youth group, he jumped to catch football, broke his leg. And if you had passed this bill, he would not have been able to receive medical care because he legally had no guardian. We see this frequently. We know that this legislature is working on many other bills to identify and address the shortfalls with our protection system. Please do not deny children access to medical care while we await our solutions for protecting our youth.
That was LC Valley Youth Resource Center President Michelle King. A committee member asked King if the law would have a chilling effect on kids reporting health conditions, knowing their parents would be in the loop. King replied her big concern is teen suicide.
My bigger concern is what happens when they're suicidal and they want to call 988? Will they be able to access that service? We have had 43 instances where children came to us and said, I just want to die. And we have wrapped these children up in blankies and got them medical care and stood in the gap with them while they made the decision between life and suicide. Suicide is the second leading cause of death in Idaho between children ages 10 to 14 or individuals ages 10 to 14. I don't think we should pass any bills that make it more difficult for people to access mental health care while we are in a suicide crisis with our youth.
Julianne Donnelly Sewell with the ACLU of Idaho said the bill would contradict several areas of existing Idaho law, and the bill does not repeal them. Sewell also said there would be public health consequences due to untreated health conditions. The bill also contains a civil cause of action, which would allow parents to sue healthcare providers, which some at the committee hearing said would disincentivize doctors from practicing in Idaho. Republican Representative Kenny Roten of Nampa said he opposed the civil cause of action part of the bill. Roten said the bill would have a chilling effect on young people needing care. He said they'll stop asking for help if they think they're going to get in trouble at home. However, Roten eventually voted in favor of the bill in committee. The bill passed in committee 13-3, with three Democrats on the committee voting against. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report.
KRFP is sponsored by Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as Euros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh. Located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.
I'd Latah and Clearwater counties would have a slightly adjusted shared boundary if lawmakers pass House Bill 646. The bill, sponsored by District 6 Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston, would also adjust the boundaries of four other counties in northern Idaho. Latah County Surveyor John Ellsbury said he has been working for 3 years to establish new clearly identified lines marking the boundaries of Bonner, Benawa, Clearwater, Kootenai, Latah, and Shoshone counties. Ellsbury told the Daily News, "This is an investment in the future because all the landowners that adjoin this boundary have to comply with county ordinances, and it's more beneficial if you know where the boundary line is between the counties." Ellsbury said the ambiguity of the north-south boundary between Latah and Clearwater counties is due to an unclear starting point at the mouth of the North Fork of the Clearwater River. Ellsbury said officials established various counties years ago under a gentleman's agreement to mitigate the $1 million price tag to hire surveyors to make permanent boundaries between the counties. He said none of these counties have the resources to do that. Ellsbury said he has been communicating with other counties to work to establish new border markings, which line up with existing markers. He said the goal is to minimize the number of acres gained or lost by the six counties when the new boundaries are established, so the costs are lower for each county. Ellsbury said, "When we proposed our boundary, we minimized the amount of change, net change in property tax revenues." Ellsbury said he has been in consultation with various small private landowners in the various counties, most of them who own land in Benawa County, abutting county lines. He said surveyors communicated with lumber companies, including Potlatch Deltic and Bennett Lumber Company. House Bill 646 has a provision permitting the state to give each of the six counties $10,000 to offset expenses by county workers who have to make the revisions. Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston sponsored the bill. The House State Affairs Committee is expected to hold a hearing on the bill soon. Pullman city officials have announced a plan to overhaul zoning codes for the first time since 2003. One of the changes would make owning a short-term rental easier. Assistant City Planner Ariel Medeiros said city officials have been discussing zoning rules for short-term rentals for a while. Medeiros told the Daily News the zoning overhaul would make it easier to understand how rentals are arranged, including short-term rentals and accessory dwelling units. Medeiros said the city will host 8 open houses this month, with meetings beginning next Monday, to get input from members of the community on the zoning overhaul. She said the zoning changes would place short-term rentals under bed and breakfast or boarding and rooming house codes, which are currently banned in the R1 and R2 zoning districts. She said owners would go through the conditional use process in zone R2. Medeiros said the changes would allow short-term rentals in all residential zones. The proposal says short-term rentals would be permitted in a single-family home, duplex, or accessory dwelling unit, with only one rental per single parcel allowed. Applicants would pay a $350 short-term permit fee with an annual renewal fee of $150. Applications would also include plot plans and floor plans, which would show evacuation routes. Applicants would have to tell city officials which websites they are using to advertise their rentals. Online rental posts would have to include a short-term rental endorsement from the city to prove they are legal. Medeiros said business licensing through the State Department of Revenue would be a requirement for all applicants. Application periods for short-term rentals would include a 10-day public comment period. If there is enough opposition to an application, the city examiner would review it. Occupancy would be limited to 10 people per rental. The proposal has parking limits, and property managers would have to live within 30-minute drive of Pullman. Property managers' contact information would have to be given to the city and neighbors within 200 feet of the rental property. Property inspections would be required and subject to re-inspections every year. The first two violations in 1 year by owners would lead to written warnings. A third violation would mean a revocation of the short-term rental endorsement. Accessory dwelling units would be limited to one per lot. Units with two or more bedrooms would require an additional parking space. Accessory dwelling units would be a minimum of 200 square feet and no larger than 900 square feet.
A program to help Washingtonians automatically save for retirement is in the final stretch in Olympia. The Washington Saves program, created by Senate Bill 6069, passed in both chambers and is awaiting concurrence. It would create an automatic savings program for workers and could benefit about 1.2 million people in the state who currently don't have access to a savings program through their work. Kathy McCall with AARP Washington says many people don't think about savings in their 20s and 30s, but will struggle if they only rely on Social Security when they retire.
If people just save about $1,000 a year and they do that consistently up to the time they retire, they financially will be in a great position to actually afford their own retirement.
McCall notes that Social Security provides $1,600 on average per month. She says people are 15 times more likely to save for retirement if money is deducted automatically from their paychecks, like with this program. Washington State's legislative session is scheduled to adjourn today. State Representative Kristen Reeves, a Democrat from Federal Way, was the sponsor of the House version of the Washington Saves bill. She says this program will be a boon for small businesses.
Being able to pick out a retirement package that meets their needs is tough and quite costly if you're a small business owner. And so this is an opportunity for us to help ensure that both small business owners, but the employees of small businesses, are getting access to retirement security from the first day they start working.
A lack of savings will cost the state nearly $4 billion by 2040, according to research from the Pew Charitable Trust. John Scott is the director of the Retirement Savings Project with Pew.
When people don't save enough for retirement, some of those folks will need some help in old age, and so they will turn to social assistance like Medicaid. And so anything we can do to help folks be prepared for retirement means that it'll be less of a fiscal concern for taxpayers in the state.
15 states already have similar savings programs in place, including California and Washington. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has charged a Livingston landlord with discrimination after investigating a complaint filed by a former tenant. State housing officials say the nature of the case is unusual and that housing discrimination is on the rise. The HUD complaint charges Livingston-based Yellowstone Apartments and owner Dana Christian with discriminating against a longtime renter for retaliating after the resident's daughter, visiting from Russia, allegedly rebuffed Christian's advances. Montana Fair Housing Executive Director Pam Bean says the renter, a Russian immigrant and U.S. citizen, had never had a problem until she asked the property owner not to approach her daughter.
She'd lived there for 4 years without any notices or violations, and all of a sudden received multiple violations in a few week period, and ultimately moving to evict the complainant.
Bean says the case will be assigned to federal court soon, and the U.S. Department of Justice will represent the renter. Christian did not respond to a request for comment. While cases of housing discrimination are on the increase in Montana as the population grows and property owners are more selective in choosing tenants, Bean says the Yellowstone case is unusual.
In that the defendants seem to just so openly retaliate against the household because it was made clear any type of relationship outside of a business relationship was not something they were interested in.
The HUD charge cites a violation of the Fair Housing Act by unlawfully coercing, intimidating, threatening, or interfering with the tenant's right to complain about unwanted advances made toward her daughter. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Mark Moran.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear tonight and tomorrow, low 23, high 46. Partly cloudy Friday night, low 29. And on Saturday, 40% chance of precipitation, chance of rain and snow between 10 a.m. and noon, then a chance of rain, snow level rising to 3,500 feet in the afternoon, otherwise mostly cloudy, high 46, little or no snow accumulation expected. 50% chance of precipitation Saturday night, Chance of rain and snow before 10 p.m., then a chance of rain after 4 a.m. Snow level 3,600 feet, lowering to 3,000 feet after midnight. Mostly cloudy, low 32. Little or no snow accumulation expected. And 80% chance of rain Sunday, mainly after 10 a.m. Snow level 2,900 feet, rising to 3,900 feet in the afternoon, high 45. Current temperature is 36.